look around you for a second. Chances are you can easily spot a piece of steel somewhere nearby.
Yeah, it's practically everywhere, right?
Exactly. Maybe it's, the leg of the dents you're sitting at, or the frame of your car parked outside, or even just the structural beams hidden inside the walls of the building you're in.
Sure.
And when we look at that steel, we see something completely solid. I mean, we see a material that is final, stable, and just absolutely unchanging.
Right. It certainly presents that way to the naked eye. We're sort of conditioned to look at a metal beam and just see a finished static product.
But what if I told you that internally, on a microscopic atomic level, that piece of steel isn't finished at all?
Yeah, that's the wild part.
Right. Like, what if instead of a stable material just resting in its final state, you were actually looking at a frozen war zone of incomplete chemical reaction?
It really requires a profound shift in how we perceive the physical world around us. Because,
Yeah.
when we think about solid metals, we don't usually picture them being paused mid-action.
Like a movie stuck on pause.
Exactly like that. But the reality of material science is that most of what we rely on for structural integrity is caught in this state of suspended animation.
And that tension, that state of being trapped mid-transformation, is the entire foundation of today's deep dive.
It's a great topic.
It really is. We are exploring a truly fascinating paper from the proceedings of an international conference titled Phase Transformations 87, which took place at the University of Cambridge.
A classic.
Yeah, authored by researchers J.R. Yang and HKDH Fadacia. This paper is going to act as our map into this microscopic world. And our mission today is to decode a specific, highly stubborn phenomenon they call reaustenitization from bainite.
I know, the terminology sounds incredibly dense up front.
Yeah.
But the stakes here are actually quite intuitive for anyone listening.
Yeah, how so?
Well, this research kind of challenges the simplified version of science most of us learn in school. We're taught that phase changes are just straightforward.
Right, like ice turns to water, water turns to steam.
Exactly. You add heat, things melt. You remove heat, things freeze. It's supposed to be this binary, predictable two-way street.
You just turn the dial up or down.
But this paper reveals that complex materials like steel possess a structural memory of their past. It demonstrates that sometimes, if you want to reverse a process like, if you want to force a material to go backward into its previous state, you can't just turn the temperature dial back up.
Wow, so the dial doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. You literally have to break the standard thermodynamic rules to overcome that memory.
Okay, let's unpack this from the very beginning, because before we can talk about reversing a process, we really need to understand the material's starting point, right?
Definitely.
What exactly is this metal reversing from?
So we are starting with a microstructural phase of steel known as bainite. Now, to understand bainite, we have to look closely at how iron and carbon atoms interact.
Okay.
At very high temperatures, steel exists in a phase called austenite.
I want to make sure we ground these terms so they don't just feel like, academic jargon. When we say austenite, we are talking about the physical arrangement of the atoms, right?
Yes, precisely. Think of austenite as a very specific architectural scaffolding of iron atoms. It's a structure technically called face-centered cubic that is relatively open.
Open as in there's empty space.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's open, it has plenty of room to house carbon atoms comfortably inside its framework. It's kind of like a grand, spacious hotel with lots of vacancies.
Okay, so the carbon atoms are just lounging in the empty rooms of this iron hotel.
That's a great way to picture it. But when you cool the steel down, that spacious architecture becomes unstable. The iron atoms want to rearrange themselves into a tighter, more compact structure called ferrite.
Uh-oh. So the hotel is downsizing.
Right. And this new ferrite structure doesn't have nearly as much room for the carbon. So as the hotel physically collapses into a smaller building, the carbon atoms get evicted.
They just get kicked out.
Yep. They are picked out into whatever remaining austenite hasn't transformed yet.
So bainite is basically the aftermath of this eviction process.
Bainite is the mixture of those two states, yeah. It consists of the newly formed, tightly packed ferrite right alongside the leftover carbon-stuffed residual austenite.
Okay, I'm with you.
And the way this mixture forms is critical to everything Yang and Badashi are studying. According to their research, the initial formation of bainite happens through a diffusionless
Well,
mechanism.
wait, let me stop you there because diffusionless sounds really counterintuitive.
I know it does.
If the carbon atoms are being evicted and moving to the leftover austenite, isn't that diffusion? Like, aren't they literally migrating?
You are hitting on the exact sequence of events there. The carbon diffuses, but the iron atoms do not.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the fundamental crystal structure of the iron snaps from the open austenite to the tight ferrite in a sudden shearing movement.
Just instantly.
Exactly. It's a massive physical shift that happens without the iron atoms slowly wandering or migrating. They just snap into their new geometry.
Almost like an earthquake along a fault line rather than a slow erosion.
That is a perfect way to visualize it.
Mm-hmm.
But immediately after that sudden earthquake, the carbon atoms, which are tiny and highly mobile compared to the iron, are rapidly ejected out of the new ferrite.
Because they don't fit anymore.
Right. They partition into the residual austenite, so the iron structure snaps first, and then the carbon frantically flees the cramped new space.
Okay, so we have this sudden structural snap followed by a frantic carbon migration. But the paper highlights a weird anomaly here, right?
Yes, a very big one.
This entire process doesn't actually finish. They call it an incomplete reaction phenomenon. The transformation just hits a wall and stops well before the remaining austenite is completely saturated with carbon.
Exactly. It ceases long before thermodynamics says it should. Under normal rules, the reaction should just continue until the carbon concentration reaches a state of true equilibrium. But it doesn't.
I need to push back on this because it feels like it violates basic physics.
It does feel that way, yeah.
If there is a fundamental law of thermodynamics driving this material toward equilibrium, why does it just give up?
No.
I mean, if I have a compressed spring, it's going to release its energy until it's fully resting. It doesn't just stop halfway uncoiled for no reason. Is it like packing a suitcase where you just shove clothes in until the zipper won't close anymore, even though there's technically space at the bottom?
Your suitcase analogy actually holds the answer, but you have to look at what is holding the zipper. In the paper, the researchers map out this limitation on a phase diagram, specifically pointing to a boundary in figure 5 that they call the T0 prime curve.
The T0 prime curve. Okay, let's translate that math into physical reality. What is that curve actually representing?
It represents the exact point where the thermodynamic driving force, the energetic tension pushing the reaction forward, literally drops to zero.
Drops to zero completely.
Completely. Think about the remaining austenite as a crowded room. Or your suitcase. The carbon atoms are being shoved into this room. As more and more carbon gets packed in, the energetic cost of shoving another atom inside increases.
Right. It gets harder and harder to push them in.
Exactly. And eventually, you hit a point where the energy required to force one more carbon atom into the austenite is exactly equal to the energy you get out of the transformation.
Ah, so the spring hasn't mechanically jammed. The forces pushing and pulling on it have just perfectly canceled each other out.
Yes. The chemical potential of the ferrite and the austenite become equal at that specific carbon concentration for that specific temperature. When you hit that T0 prime curve, the thermodynamic engine simply stalls.
Wow.
The physical structure literally cannot accommodate any more transformation under those conditions, even though true equilibrium hasn't been reached. The reaction halts, freezing the material in this stubborn, incomplete state.
Which leaves us with this frozen snapshot of a microscopic war zone. And this is exactly the state the researchers want to study. They want to figure out how to unpause the movie. But to do that, to accurately measure how this incomplete material behaves when you try to reverse it, they can't just, you know, grab a scrap piece of construction steel off the ground.
Oh, they absolutely cannot. Real world steel is incredibly messy.
Just too many variables.
Way too many. It's full of impurities, microfractures, varying concentrations of random elements. When you are trying to observe microscopic thermodynamic thresholds, even a slight impurity will completely muddy your data.
So the energy landscape would just be too chaotic to read.
Unprecise.
So they had to engineer a perfectly clean environment. They created this highly specific, hyper-controlled alloy. The recipe they used was iron, mixed with exactly 0.06% carbon, 0.27% silicon, 1.84% manganese, 2.48% nickel, and 0.20% molybdenum.
It's a very deliberate cocktail.
It reads less like a structural material and more like an incredibly expensive, highly sensitive laboratory instrument.
Because it is. Every single element in that recipe is performing a vital strategic role. They weren't just throwing metals together in a pot. The primary goal of this specific composition was to eliminate a massive variable that usually plagues metallurgists,
Which is what?
The precipitation of a compound called cementite.
Oh, okay. I've heard of cementite. It's a very hard, brittle compound of iron and carbon that usually forms when you heat treat steel. But why is it such a problem for this specific experiment?
Because if cementite forms, it acts like an energetic black hole for carbon.
A black hole.
Yeah, it basically
No.
eats up the carbon from the surrounding material and completely alters the local thermodynamic landscape. If cementite is present, you are no longer just studying the relationship between ferrite and austenite.
Right, you have this third thing messing it all up.
Exactly. You have this third incredibly greedy party skewing all your measurements.
So how does that specific alloy recipe stop the cementite from crashing the party?
It's primarily the silicon.
The silicon.
Really?
Yeah. The silicon in the alloy acts like a microscopic bouncer. It physically places itself in the atomic interfaces and drastically slows down the formation of cementite. It literally prevents the carbon atoms from grouping together to form those hard, brittle blocks.
That is wild. The silicon is literally running interference at the atomic level.
It is, and it works beautifully. The researchers held this specific alloy at a temperature of 460 degrees Celsius for 30 minutes to form their initial bainite.
Okay, so that's the setup.
Right. And thanks to the silicon bouncer and the exact balance of the other heavy elements, they proved, and they document this clearly in figures 1 and 2 with electron microscopy, that they successfully created a pristine, plate-like microscopic structure of bainite entirely free of cementite.
So they spent all this time engineering this perfect sterile environment just to set the trap.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like they built a completely sterile vacuum chamber just to see how one specific feather falls. They needed the absolute perfect before picture before they could start messing with it.
What's fascinating here is how they measured the after picture. They didn't just throw this pristine sample into a furnace and check on it an hour later.
Right, that would be too simple.
They placed the sample inside a machine called a dilatometer, which was directly interfaced with a computer.
I want to focus on this dilatometer for a second because the mechanism is just incredible. A dilatometer measures physical expansion and contraction, right?
Yes, exactly.
But we are talking about microscopic atomic shifts here.
Extremely microscopic. As the crystal structure of the metal changes from one phase to another, say, from the tight ferrite back to the spacious austenite, the actual physical volume of the metal changes.
It actually gets bigger or smaller.
Yes, the sample literally lengthens or shrinks by fractions of a millimeter. And the dilatometer is sensitive enough to feel the solid metal swelling and contracting as the atomic lattice rearranges itself.
And the computer was recording these minute physical changes every 0.01 seconds. They weren't just looking at the final result.
No, they were watching the solid atomic structure breathe in real time.
Which sets the stage perfectly for their main experiment. They have their pristine cementite-free bainite locked in its incomplete state at 460 degrees Celsius, sitting inside a highly sensitive dilatometer.
The trap is set.
Now, they're going to try to reverse the reaction. They're going to try to unbake the cake, so to speak, to force the ferrite to turn back into the spacious austenite.
Right.
The technical term they use is isothermal re-austenitization. They took these perfect samples and rapidly heated them up to various higher temperatures to see what would happen.
They tested a rigorous spectrum of temperatures from 680 degrees Celsius all the way up to 770 degrees Celsius. And this is where the dilatometer data, shown in figures 3 and 4 of the paper, reveals something truly bizarre.
I was looking at those graphs, and at 680 degrees Celsius, the reverse reaction barely even registers. It just limps along.
It really does.
But here is the part that completely broke my intuition. Even when they crank the heat up to 710 degrees, then 730 degrees, then 750 degrees, the reversal was still incomplete.
Yep.
The solid metal simply refused to fully transform back into austenite. It would start, and then it would just flat out hit a wall and stop. It only fully reverted to 100% austenite if they hit 760 degrees Celsius or above.
That is the pivotal anomaly of the paper. Below 760 degrees, the re-austenitization begins, the atoms start shifting, and then the thermodynamic engine stalls again. It hits a brand new energetic wall.
I have to admit, I was totally confused by this. My basic logic says that if you add heat to a system to change its state, it should happen proportionally.
That's what most people would think.
Right. If I have a frozen pipe and I apply a moderate amount of heat, the ice inside melts slowly. If I apply a blowtorch, it melts quickly. But eventually, it all melts. Why does this alloy hit a wall at 730 degrees and just refuse to keep transforming?
It defies our everyday experience.
It's like turning the oven back on to melt a half-baked cake, but the cake refuses to melt until you crank it to a highly specific extreme temperature. It feels like the material is stubbornly defying the heat.
It feels defiant because we are mistakenly treating heat as a simple, linear dial that guarantees a physical change.
Okay.
To understand why it hits that wall and stops at 750 degrees, we have to look much closer at the microscopic environment. We have to look at the massive atomic traffic jam that heating creates.
Okay, take us down into the traffic jam. What is actually happening when they crank the heat?
Let's look at the microanalytical data in Table 1 of the paper. When the researchers heat the metal to force the reversal, the environment changes drastically.
How so?
Well, at these much higher temperatures, it isn't just the tiny, nimble carbon atoms zipping around anymore.
Hmm.
Now, the heavy elements, the massive atoms like manganese and nickel, gain enough thermal energy to start moving.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they begin actively shuffling around and partitioning between the different microscopic phases.
So during the initial colder reaction, only the nimble carbon was moving. Now that it's hot, the giant atoms are getting involved.
Yes, and their involvement changes everything. Let's step away from the highway analogy and think about it like trying to rebuild a grand hotel, the austenite, from a collapsed, tightly packed structure. The bainite.
I like this analogy.
The carbon atoms are like nimble carpenters. They can move quickly, slipping between walls, doing the fine detail work. But the manganese and nickel atoms, they are the massive, heavy steel beams of the framework.
And the carpenters can't do their job if the steel beams aren't in the right place.
Exactly. Even if you give the carpenters endless energy by adding heat, they literally cannot rebuild the Grand Hotel if the heavy steel beams haven't been dragged into the proper position.
That makes total sense.
And dragging those heavy manganese and nickel atoms requires a massive amount of specific thermodynamic force. Their slow movement fundamentally alters the local energy landscape, acting as a massive drag on the entire reversal process.
So the heavy elements are holding up the reconstruction. But the theoretical breakthrough in this paper goes even deeper than just slow-moving heavy atoms, doesn't it?
It does.
It connects back to that idea of memory we brought up at the start.
Yes. And this is where the thermodynamics get truly fascinating. Remember, the initial formation of the bainite stopped prematurely.
Right, the incomplete reaction.
Exactly. It left the carbon concentration inside the residual austenite way below the true equilibrium line, which they map as the AE3 curve on their phase diagram.
It stopped early, so the starting conditions for the reverse process are totally skewed.
Skewed is putting it lightly.
Hmm.
Because the material stopped in that artificially incomplete state, it is essentially sitting at the bottom of a thermodynamic valley it shouldn't be in.
Okay.
The mathematics of the paper show that when you first try to reverse the process and turn it back into austenite, the thermodynamic driving force is actually negative.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because I'm stuck on the phrase negative driving force.
It's a tricky concept.
If the force is negative, doesn't that mean the material actively wants to go in the opposite direction? Why doesn't it just turn back into whatever it was before? How can adding heat make something less likely to change?
It's a brilliant question.
Mm-hmm.
A negative driving force doesn't mean it goes backward in time. It means the energy landscape is steeply tilted against the transformation you were trying to cause.
Like pushing a boulder up a hill.
Exactly. Usually, adding heat is like pushing harder. But because of the incomplete memory of the bainite, it's as if the hill itself has suddenly become much steeper. The material actively resists the reversal.
Because of where it started.
Right. It requires a tremendous disproportionate amount of energy just to overcome the initial resistance of that skewed carbon concentration.
The structural memory is actively fighting the heat. So how do you win? If the hill is too steep and the heavy steel beams refuse to move, how do you force the entire material to reverse back into pure austenite?
You have to overwhelm the system's memory. The researchers calculated that you have to artificially force the temperature above a very specific mathematically derived point on the phase diagram. They mark this threshold as T gamma 1 in figure 5.
Let's give T gamma 1 a name that we can actually visualize. Let's call it the amnesia point.
I like that, the amnesia point. It is the exact temperature required to make the metal forget its incomplete past.
Wow.
The paper states that the temperature need only be raised infinitesimally above this specific amnesia point for the reverse transformation to finally become thermodynamically possible.
You literally have to overshoot the temperature. You can't just gently warm it up and expect it to remember how to be austenite.
No, not at all.
You have to blast it past the amnesia point to force the driving force to finally flip from negative to positive.
You have to push it hard enough to overcome the massive energetic deficit left behind by its previous incomplete reaction. And here's the truly stubborn part.
There's more.
Oh, yeah. Even after you cross the amnesia point, as we saw in the dilatometer data, if you only push the heat to 730 or 750 degrees, the material will start to transform, but it will quickly hit a new energetic limitation and stop halfway again.
Because the heavy steel beams, the manganese and nickel, are still dragging their feet?
Right. To force the material to transform completely, 100%, back into the spacious austenite structure, you can't just cross the amnesia point.
So you have to go further.
You have to blast the material all the way past that 760-degree threshold to give those heavy elements the overwhelming thermal energy they need to finally move into their new positions.
It's incredible. It takes a massive, specific over-application of energy just to clear the structural baggage of the past.
Which is why this paper is considered such a cornerstone piece of research in metallurgy. It proved that reversing these solid-state reactions isn't about simply adding heat until things melt.
Right.
It's about navigating a microscopic, highly complex landscape of negative driving forces, dragging heavy elements and stubborn physical boundaries.
So what does this all mean? I mean, bringing this all back down to Earth. We've just spent this deep dive exploring a metallurgy paper from 1988, looking at microscopic architectural shifts, bouncer-like silicon atoms, and the amnesia point of carbon structures.
It's a lot to take in.
It is. So why should you, the listener, walking around in a world made of steel, care about the incomplete re-austenitization of bainite?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you should care because it completely shatters the illusion of equilibrium. We tend to view the physical world around us as being settled.
Right, finished.
But this research teaches us that pure final equilibrium is exceptionally rare in the materials we rely on. Most useful, strong, resilient materials in our world, like the alloys holding up bridges or the steel and surgical instruments, they are deliberately trapped in what physicists call local thermodynamic minimums.
They aren't in their final ultimate resting state.
Not at all. They're caught midway through a reaction, held in tension by the limitations of temperature and atomic mobility.
That's wild.
Their incredible strength, their durability, their specific utility to human engineering, all of it comes from the fact that they are paused. Understanding exactly how they are trapped, what energetic memory they carry, and what extreme thresholds are required to untrap them. That is the entire foundation of modern material science.
It's all about managing the incomplete. The strength comes from the tension, and I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder as you look back at that steel desk leg or the frame of the building you were sitting in right now.
Yeah.
If the solid, unyielding steel of our physical world is truly just a frozen snapshot of an incomplete reaction, a material carrying a stubborn atomic memory that dictates exactly how much extreme heat is required to force it to change, what other systems in our world operate exactly the same way?
It's a profound question.
Think about it. Whether we are talking about complex, fragile ecological networks, volatile economic markets, or even our own deeply ingrained psychological habits. Right?
How many of those systems are simply paused in an incomplete state? How many of them are carrying the heavy, negative driving force of their own history, just waiting for the exact right temperature, the exact right amount of external overwhelming energy to cross their own amnesia point and finally be forced back into motion?